Hunter Biden brought his porno film crew and his ambulance chasers down to the Capitol Hill for the hearing that he was subpoenaed to attend. He got Nancy Mace to go for that viral soundbite attempt by saying, "Hunter, you don't have any balls!" So she could use that in her re-election ads and hope for some sort of brushfire TikTok post, which she executed with as much awkwardness as telling a room full of evangelicals at a prayer breakfast that, you know, you were kind of late or almost late because you were going to be the keynote, but you decided against getting pounded out in a hotel room by your boyfriend.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Chairman Comer. First of all, my first question is, who bribed Hunter Biden to be here today? That's my first question. Second question, you are the epitome of white privilege, coming into the Oversight Committee, spitting in our face, ignoring a congressional subpoena to be deposed. What are you afraid of? You have no balls to come up here and...
Mr. Chairman, point of inquiry.
She basically cock-blocked Marjorie Taylor Greene, no pun intended. Her full-on locomotion of pent-up disdain for the little 50-year-old kid with the most white privilege across the fruited plain.
Gentlemen, time's expired. Chair recognizes Ms. Green from Georgia for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Excuse me, Hunter. Oh, apparently, you're afraid of my words.
Whoa!
Oh! I'd like to reclaim my time, Mr. Chairman.
Burst their bubble.
Wow, that's too bad.
Now, Hunter was able to just storm on out like any other person would be able to do, or not. And, you know, not long before being asked if he likes the coolness of the menthols or the smoothness of the hickory-flavored crack.
Hunter, what's your favorite type of crack? Are you on crack today?
Poor little Hunter. Mama Dr. Jill griped about how cruel Republicans are to her stepson.
How have you been coping personally with the onslaught of accusations against your husband and your family, including and especially Hunter, as the focus of a House Oversight Committee hearing, holding him in contempt, obsessing yes. over him, showing pictures of him during vulnerable moments in his battle with addiction, on the floor of the House? This would crush any family.
Mika, I think what they are doing to Hunter is cruel. And I'm really proud of how Hunter has rebuilt his life after addiction. You know, I love my son, and it's hurt my grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm so concerned about, that it's affecting their lives as well.
She's really worried about the grandchildren, except for the one that she... forgot to put a Christmas stocking on the mantle on the fireplace because she doesn't recognize Hunter's new illegitimate daughter. But anyways, but apparently not all that cruel because he walked right on out without being arrested. Definitely not as cruel as the Democrats are when they're arresting 80-year-old grandmothers wearing American flag-colored fanny packs and holding up Yeti cups filled with Chardonnay strolling through the Capitol on a balmy January 6th day. Now... But, you know, we also had other events happen this week, such as the big debate, another slog debate with the GOP on opposition propaganda state-run TV, CNN. It was between Ron DeSantis and Nikki Haley. Nikki Haley warned everybody in the beginning at Drake University, "Hey, students at Drake, be cautious about taking all of Ron's lies and making a drinking game out of it because you're going to be more wasted than Hunter Biden would be in a strip club." But the real drinking game that your liver would have cursed your name for the end of time was for taking shots, as if you took shots every time Nikki glitched out and was stuck on RonDeSantisLies.com, DeSantisLies.com, DeSantisLies.com. You could have even added a downing of a full beer every time Ron ripped on Nikki's flip-flopping hypocrisy on positions when he said, "You know, there's also a video out there of you saying that, Nikki." And while they were punching for second place, former President Trump somehow got lost in the Iowa annex of the underground Jewish tunnel and ended up across the street from the debate at his own town hall on Fox News to tell everyone that he never wanted to impose a national lockdown. I think he lost his tweets from 2020 in the soiled mattresses blocking the entrance to the Gideon mole hole.
Would you ever allow a shutdown in the future?
You're talking about a COVID shutdown?
Correct.
No, I wouldn't. And I never did.
We did the right thing. We closed the country down.
I could have kept it open.
And I could have done what some countries are doing.
I had to shut it down. We did the right thing.
Florida did shut down. Ron DeSantis shut down.
We're in a place called Florida, and we have a great governor.
A great governor knows exactly what he's doing.
Terrific job. He just announced that the schools will be open.
Governor's done a great job. Florida is down low now in the China virus.
He shut his state down very violently.
And you're open and you didn't close, and you're just amazing, right? It's great.
One of the greatest governors in our country, and I know a lot of good ones, and I can tell you there's some really bad ones too, but this is a great one, Governor Ron DeSantis.
And Mr. Federalist here, he was for against the lockdowns before he was for them, and now he's against them. You know, I know he's not for the lockdowns of the schools in the Big Apple, turning them into La Dia Festivo Inn expresses for our overcapacity-filled illegal guest, while the taxpayers' children go back to zooming in math, diversity, and gender ideology from a bitter teacher who wants to discuss their alternative lifestyle extracurricular activities with the kiddos. But he definitely encouraged the initial ones back in March of 2020. Let's not forget this great tweet from Donald Trump back on April 13, 2020. For the purpose of creating conflict and confusion, some in the fake news media are saying that it's the governor's decision to open up the states, not that of the president of the United States and the federal government. Let it be fully understood that this is incorrect. It is the decision of the president, and for many good reasons. With that being said, the administration and I are working closely with the governors and will continue. A decision by me in conjunction with the governors and input from others will be made shortly. I actually kind of wish Trump would do whatever it is that John Fetterman is doing to enhance that mental clarity. I mean, John Fetterman and I were on the same page on the treatment of Israel. We weren't dodging poop logs and heroin needles on the Golden Gate Bridge to rush down and cheer for that completely ineffective and flaccid Israeli-Gaza ceasefire order that they passed in the San Francisco City Council.
And now let's also talk about that. Now we're talking about genocide. And now South Africa now is now bringing that kind of a trial. Maybe South Africa being able to sit this one out when they're talking about criticizing. Sit it out.
And not to be outdone and outdumbed, South Africa decided to jump in on the action and vote to condemn Israel for genocide, probably overlooked their stellar treatment of the white farmers. And thank the Lord Lurch had that presence of mind, that mind-altering stroke, because his recovery has been incredible. A Democrat defending Israel is like watching a vegan activist protect a Texas roadhouse. He has a more solid stance than a Harvard president when she's not looting literal works, like a flash mob showing up at a Los Angeles Target store. That type of diversity hiring leads to an utter disaster, and we'll get into some other examples of the DEI movement screwing up businesses and ruining society. It's the Adrian Slade Show.
The presidential motorcade was just passed through heavy crowds in downtown Dallas.
Destroying the media lies and dismantling the narratives, one story at a time. It's the Adrian Slade Show.
Diversity, equity, and inclusion. This AstroTurf movement is all over the place. It's in your boardrooms. It's in government. It's in schools. It's being implemented everywhere, even in some churches, which is unbelievable to me. And it stems from Marxism. I believe it's just a vehicle for Marxists to run their power players to the top of any organization, any business, any entity, so they can weaponize it later. You know, push for the agenda. If they become like Netflix and they become really influential, then, you know, they can turn around and suddenly go all Pride Day and then talk about how black history is important because white people were oppressive and all this stuff. And you're like, aren't you just showing us entertainment? You know, this is how they do it. And diversity, equity, inclusion stems from what they call critical race theory. And it actually stems from critical theory. Well, it's an arm of the environmental, social, and governance idea. You know, ESG, climate change is the environment side, but diversity, equity, inclusion is the S and the G in ESG. All of these metrics are used to control how a business operates, to control how you get funding for capital, you get access to things. It's like a mafia scheme. You know, you better do good on your climate score. You better do good with hiring the right ES or the DEI individuals even if they're not qualified, and then we'll give you some capital. We'll give you access. We'll let you in the door. It's a private sector way of controlling everybody else. And that's the thing is diversity, equity, inclusion comes from critical race theory, which comes from critical theory. Now, critical theory is a Marxist idea, but it was based on class mechanisms, you know, the haves and the have-nots, the proletariat and the bourgeoisie, right? So the problem is that worked great in European countries, over in the East, you know, over in Asia and what have you. But in America, that doesn't work because one day you can be a have and next day you can be a have-not. You can win the lottery and suddenly become a have. You can be a great business leader and have business go bottom up, and next thing you know, you're a have-not. Or you can go bankrupt because of bad business dealings. You could have business takeover. There's so many ways that you can traverse through the class system in America that it never stuck. But what if you could find a way to do it with race? Well, that's what they did, and that's where critical race theory has become the new critical theory. You know, it's like black people are oppressed, so we have to, you know, liberate them. Oh, well then, you know, on top of that, we have to look at Hispanics, you know? They're oppressed, even though we can use them for picking vegetables, am I right?
And we need immigrants in this country. Forget the fact that the farm, that our vegetables would rot in the ground if they weren't being picked by many immigrants, many illegal immigrants. The fact is that the birth rate in this country is way below replacement level, which means our population is going to start shrinking. And the ratio of people on Social Security and Medicare is going to increase relative to the number of people supporting them.
See, it goes from picking cotton to picking vegetables. And we need them to pick our vegetables. That's the Democrats for you. They still have that mindset. But yet they're the ones that get voted for thanks to Lyndon B. Johnson's, you know, great society ruse. And that's part of it, too. But now, what classes don't enjoy this? Well, of course, the Caucasians, you know, they just dump all over them because, you know, screw them. But then the Jews, yeah, the Jewish people, you know, they have to resort to building tunnels underground so they don't get beaten in public in New York. They, you know, they make a lot of money, so we'll throw them in with the white people. But then the Asians, well, they're on the fence with them. They're like, well, you know, you guys are a race and you're a minority, but you guys are kind of smart and you do well in business, so we'll kind of hate you, but not really. But that's critical race theory. And it's all a part of diversity, equity, inclusion. So now we're seeing the fruits of this stupid ruse coming to bear itself to the public. You know, what happens if you take a lot of unqualified people and put them at the top of all types of industry? You know, what if you put them in front of academia? You take prestigious universities like Harvard and you put a diversity, equity, inclusion hire as its president, and you find out she made her way that quickly to becoming president because she plagiarized everybody's works to get her credentials, and then they maneuvered her around so that they could get her right in position to where she could go, yes, pro-Palestine, free Palestine, right? That's what we saw with Claudine Gay that we talked about in our podcast about a month ago. We were ahead of the curve on that one. That's what we're seeing with Boeing, with airlines. And it's really incredible to watch. So Boeing's manufacturing has gone to crap, which is crazy because Boeing was like the gold standard of airplane manufacturing. And it's crazy because some of this can be attributed to DEI. Now, this is from the Wall Street Journal. This has been going on for years inside Boeing's manufacturing mess. Long before the harrowing Alaska Airlines blowout on January 5th, there were concerns within Boeing about the way the aerospace giant was building its planes. Boeing, like many other American manufacturers, was outsourcing more and more of its components that went into its complex machines. But there's even more than that. And so there was an Alaska Airlines plane that flew, and one of the plugs blew out, and it was crazy because a kid's shirt was sucked right off of him. Now, people were safe in the plane, believe it or not, but it was enough to scare the crap out of people, and people were like, what's going on with this plane incident? And that's the problem. The quality has gone out through outsourcing, but also through its own American side through DEI hiring, because they're not hiring the best people to build these planes. What's even crazier is that Alaska Airlines, the black box, recording's gone. I don't know what happened to it. We have no recording. Completely erased. Okay. I thought those things were supposed to withstand a World Trade Center, straight ahead slam, which we found those at the bottom of the rubble. And now Boeing CEO David Calhoun, in his first public remarks since Friday of the Alaska Airlines incident, vowed Boeing would approach official probes with 100% and complete transparency every step of the way. This is from the street. Boeing's shares moved higher on Wednesday following 2 days of declines as the CEO acknowledged the plane maker's mistakes linked to the blowout of the Alaska Airlines fuselage and vowed it would never happen again. Speaking at a hastily arranged town hall meeting in Washington, Calhoun told Boeing employees that he was shaken to the bone by the late Friday incident, which involved Boeing-made 737 MAX 9 jet. Those have all been grounded, by the way. So here's an interesting post that I saw considering this entire situation from a Porter Stansberry. He said, a year ago, Porter and Company published a dire warning about a mega cap American stock. This was the only mega cap stock we told investors to avoid. And it was no ordinary business. It is America's most strategically important company. We said that it would soon collapse. Well, our January 27th headline, coming soon, the Boeing collapse. How did we know? For the last 20 years, that company hasn't been a company in America, and it's embraced more bad ideas, from financial engineering to ESG and diversity, equity, inclusion, than Boeing. In 1997, Boeing merged with a fellow aerospace manufacturer, McDonnell Douglas, another name in the quality of engineering and airlines, in a $13 billion stock swap. It was a match made in hell. Boeing was known for quality. McDonnell was known for financial engineering, with a focus on cost-cutting and the company's share price. Although the Boeing name survived, it was the McDonnell Douglas attitude that prevailed. McDonnell CEO Harry Stonecipher, who took over the day-to-day operations at Boeing, immediately took a carving knife to Boeing's highly paid engineering staff. And in May of 2001, Boeing management made a physical break with its engineers. Manufacturing headquarters stayed in Seattle, while corporate moved to downtown Chicago, 1,700 miles away. That split symbolized the growing distance between business and the bosses. To say that the company's engineers were disenfranchised doesn't describe it. Boeing's entire culture was erased. CEO Stonecipher even bragged about what he destroyed. Quote, when people say I changed the culture of Boeing, that was the intent. So it's run like a business rather than a giant engineering firm. Today, both Boeing CFO Brian West and David Calhoun are formerly senior GE finance people. And they've done to Boeing what they did to GE, destroy the balance sheet. From 2010 to 2019, Boeing spent $44 billion on buying its own shares while adding $50 billion in debt. This reduced the share count by 23% and sent the stock price up 200%. But the underlying business? Beam counters can't build airplanes, and Boeing's planes started falling out of the sky. As a result, free cash flow plunged to negative $4.3 billion annually in 2019. Today, bankruptcy grows more certain. Cumulative net income over the last 3 years is negative $200 billion, and the company has $52 billion in total debt. Interest expense is $2.5 billion a year, but will move much higher as Boeing's debt will be downgraded to complete junk. But never fear, investors have nothing to worry about with one of America's greatest and most important companies spiraling towards bankruptcy, like their plane spiraling towards the ground, because Stephanie Pope will save the day. Stephanie Pope is the chief operating officer of Boeing. She holds a bachelor's degree in accounting from Southwest Missouri State University and an MBA from another intellectual powerhouse, Lindenwood University. She has zero engineering background. Why would someone of this kind of background be placed in charge of operations of one of the world's leading aerospace engineering firms? Maybe because she is the executive sponsor of Boeing's Women Inspiration Leadership, a group dedicated to increasing gender diversity awareness. Boeing's planes kept falling apart. These outcomes are the results of years and years of bad ideas, starting with the intentional destruction of Boeing's engineering culture, followed by the GE financing engineering, and now the company's full embrace of modern Marxism, ESG, environmental, social, and governance. Like we predicted years ago, Boeing is going to collapse, and when its debt gets downgraded, the stock will drop by more than 50% to below $100. And then, just like we warned about GE and GM, this one impregnable icon of capitalism is headed for bankruptcy. Is this piling on because of a freak accident? Nope. We reiterated our call 2 weeks ago on December 22nd. Porter & Company updated its naughty list, a list of 10 stocks we predicted are going straight to hell. First company on our list, Boeing. Boeing is a wonderful metaphor for our entire society. When we promote people because of their political views or their race or their sex instead of their competencies, we get planes that fall out of the sky. When will the madness end? And so if you follow James Lindsay, this guy's great on DEI and ESG. He's been all over this. He digs deep and he finds really amazing stuff. He said, let's have a close look at Boeing and DEI. Boeing's corporate filings with the SEC reveal that beginning 2022, the annual bonus plan to reward CEOs and executives for increasing profit for shareholders and prioritizing safety was changed to reward them if they hit the DEI targets. Said up to 40% of the executives' potential pay is in that annual incentive pay program, which is tied to hitting DEI targets. For those just catching on, DEI doesn't have anything to do with aircraft manufacturing or safety. Boeing didn't just mandate DEI at Boeing. It also prioritized ESG and DEI in their supply chain with an ESG agenda all over the place, which suggests that they did not look for the best suppliers of quality and safety on objective metrics, but focused on meeting the ESG goals instead. The annual incentive bonus program tied to DEI targets is more than the base salary of the CEO or the CFO. It is equal to the salary of the chief legal officer. These are perverse incentives for ideological projects that, at best, water down Boeing's mission, building safe aircraft. It gets worse. In 2023, Boeing's GEDI report showed it is proud of how they tied executive compensation to DEI, not to meritocracy and excellence, regardless of race, identity. And in fact, they give business resource groups stock awards for their contributions to inclusion. So what is a business resource group, you might ask? It is a self-selecting race and identity-based segregated group of employees promoted by management. They meet with an equity and inclusion steering team to, quote, discuss progress related to the company's equity commitments. Boeing in 2023, its DEI-GEDI report, they are proud that more than 50% of their interns are from underrepresented backgrounds. We're hiring based on merit or based on skin color and identity in play. DEI was never about proportionate representation. It's about destroying objective merit. Why does this matter? Whistleblowers from Boeing have pointed out safety concerns with Boeing's production quality issues since 2018. But instead of prioritizing safety and fixing these issues, the company just created bonuses that incentivize management for focusing on hiring those that hit the DEI goals. In fact, if you look at their corporate filings, SEC Form 14A, the word diversity appears 54 times, and the word merit appears zero times. The focus away from meritocracy to diversity, equity, inclusion will likely kill thousands one day due to the erosion of merit, safety, and excellence. That's crazy. They're paying them the biggest lumps of sums of money to just hire diversity hires. So you get Claudine Gay, but you get her building airplanes. Meanwhile, corporate ESG and DEI plans incentivize CEOs and executives to violate the 1964 Civil Rights Act and Equal Protection Clause for 14A for a bigger bonus, as was reported in 2020. From the New York Post, Boeing CEO pledges a 20% increase in black employees. Okay? Boeing is not only the only company to have a DEI target bonus. Companies like Starbucks, they have them too. Starbucks makes coffee, though. Boeing makes jetliners. People's lives are at stake, and we still have to avoid the otherwise inevitable diversity plane crash. You know, here's the thing about this, and you've seen this in your daily life. You've seen this in public, and you probably scratched your head. Why are there so many homosexual activists running all these businesses or organizations at the top of these organizations? And then the organization comes out and they're like, yeah, go Pride. And they, you know, have all of their products in rainbow colors, and they're selling tuckable swimsuits for boys who want to look like girls. And they're putting all this stuff in the front of their stores like Target. And you're looking at all these different people that are these schools that are out there promoting Hamas and talking free Palestine, and, you know, in the equity inclusion of all types of things are involved. It's not just race. It's body positivity. That's why you have these people out there talking like this.
We're fat. Of course we're wearing bike shorts underneath skirts and dresses. No chub rub here.
We're fat. Of course the only medical advice we've ever received is to lose weight, no matter the ailment.
We're fat. Of course we grew up wearing a t-shirt over our bathing suit.
We're fat. Of course we're gonna pull our shirts down over our knees to stretch them out a little bit. That's normal.
We're fat. Of course men are rude to us in public, but slide into those DMs.
We're fat. Of course I've done the Weight Watchers diet.
Slim Fast.
Jenny Craig.
Nutrisystem.
South Beach.
Kellogg's Red Berries.
Atkins diet.
Whole 30.
We're fat. Of course we endured a childhood of internalized fat phobia, only to find fat scholarship later in life and discover that anti-fatness is rooted in misogyny, racism, colonialism, and has evolved to be a major tool of patriarchal capitalism. And we've discovered that the way to truly make everyone better and happier is to love ourselves in a way that is rebellious and authentic. Keto.
It's always about liberation. Liberating from what? Liberating from republicanism? And I don't mean like party politics. I'm talking about constitutional representative republicanism that is the founding of America. Is that the liberation that they're being liberated from? Because they can just go out and be gluttonous? I think it's liberation from godly principles. And see, that's the problem. The Caucasians, they're put into this area because not only are they just, they're not oppressed. They did all the oppressing. Same with the Jewish people. It's because they have a God. They have a higher power other than government, other than the state, and that bothers them because they have to be the highest power. They can have no other gods other than the state. And so to get there, to peddle influence, to push agendas across the line, they have to weaponize the corporate structure. They have to weaponize power structures in the private sector or in the nonprofit sector so that they can push their agenda across the finish line. That's why they're going after country music and NASCAR. You know, they have to make it woke. They have to have a female lesbian country singer. They have to have a pride car drive in its, you know, NASCAR events. They have to have Taylor Swift come out of the closet and say she's homosexual, because even though she's not, she sings about all of these different relationships with boyfriends. She's got such a following, and we have to weaponize that following because we have to weaponize you. We have to influence you to jump on board with our Marxism. And that's the point of the whole thing. It's just a way to implement Marxism, communism on the outside, instead of doing it through elections and consent of we the people, because government is ultimately just us. It is consent of we the people. We send representatives to act on our behalf, to convene together, to do things for our best interest as voters. because we have a life to live and we need somebody that we can just go, hey, can you handle this? Because we have to do what we have to do. But the communists figured out we can go in there and change that and work against the people. But if in a republic that can vote on many different levels, that's not always effective. So let's do it through the private sector and let's do it by weaponizing funding. Then we can get climate change nonsense, even though it's been shown that the sun is more impactful than carbon emissions. We can do it through natural asset companies where we can own the air rights over your building. So if you put some emissions up, well, then we'll just penalize you for infringing on our air rights. We can do all of this Marxist weaponization and you have no say about it because, you know, it's a private business. You know, you little Republicans should keep your capitalism and your, you know, Gordon Gekko mindset of supporting anything that's business, even though it's infringing upon your personal rights, which we talked about. Corporations are people, so corporations should be treated as another person. And if that person's infringing upon your rights, then you should be able to handle that. You shouldn't just go, well, it's a business organization and we love business, so do what you want. Now, that's got to stop. We got to get out of that mindset. And ESG needs to be extracted because it's going to get people killed. I'm Adrian Slade. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you guys next time. God bless.